looking for great themes in the book of Isaiah. We have looked at God as creator and as sovereign and as compassionate. And we are looking this morning at, if you do any reading in the book of Isaiah at all, you can't miss this theme that God is all wise. Is that really the same as Him knowing everything? We'll see in just a moment. I think sometimes you and I can be amazed at the wealth of knowledge that some people have. That a person can go on a game show and category after category, maybe week after week, and answering questions, you think, how do they know that? How does anybody know that fact? Where would you read that? Where would you even find that out? You and I might actually plan ahead at times and have wisdom to look at our schedule and how things are supposed to go. But most of what you and I do is a response. God doesn't just respond and wait around to see what we're going to do, and then He acts. God is always directing, moving, and all this in accordance with His perfect wisdom and power. Just a few weeks ago, you know, you're constantly learning about each other in marriage. So a few weeks ago, my wife said, "Why did you just turn right?" We were headed somewhere, and it was in a diagonal over that way, and she would have gone straight, and then, but came to a red light, and red light means if you can make a right, and so you don't have to sit there, why would I sit there? I'll take a diagonal, you know. And she said, "You know, I guess I just never knew that, that I always wondered." And, but it's a response. Life throws me a red light, I make a right. Because I can't make a left, you know. We are to respond to hardships and trials in our life with humility and dependence upon the Lord. When we do so, we are, in a sense, wise. When we rely upon ourselves, when we blame others or with anger, self-reliance, the Bible says, you're a fool. You're acting foolish. I'm calling God's wisdom in this title transcendent because it is over and extends and it's surpassing greatness of it. Isaiah calls it excellent. And really, as we read through God's word, we should say, what a wonderful truth it is that God not only knows, but God is moving all things according to His purpose. The one who is creator and sustainer and Lord and sovereign and compassionate. He's also the best source of wisdom that leads us to success. And we should be relying upon Him. Isaiah is saying, Judah, you can do no better than this, to rely upon the one who has led you in the past and who knows the future perfectly and is moving things step by step in that direction. The smartest teacher you ever had didn't know everything about everything. Somebody taught them well, and then they prepared well. But there were gaping holes in their knowledge. If they were honest and open with you, they'd be the first to admit it. But Elihu, in correcting and instructing Job, makes this point that we would have to agree with this statement. He says, who is a teacher like him? Who is a teacher like God? Who has ever been his instructor? Our Lord Jesus Christ, taught as one having authority and not as the scribes. They were constantly amazed by his knowledge, but didn't really realize his wisdom and that it came from God. It's not unusual to see a commercial that says you should be investing and diversifying and getting gold and silver. And at the end of that, it's just not just throwing that out for your knowledge. And they say, and the best place to get gold and silver, call this number. The best, really the only place to get wisdom is from God, who is the source of it and the instructor of it. you'll look with me in your outline, the first thing I want us to see in Isaiah, at least in my studies, I broke it down these three ways. We speak about this wisdom, God is transcendent wisdom. He is preeminently knowing all things. Preeminently knowing all things. And I'm going to read to you, and we'll jump around for a while, because I want you to see this theme in different passages, and then we will finally kind of rest towards the end of the message on chapter 28. But in chapter 55, to start off with, in verses 8 and 9, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord." Read verse 9 with me. "For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts." The fact is this, point A, in wisdom, he has no rival. Has no rival. At one point when I was teaching at a Christian school, teaching a Bible class, and it was quite an amazing block of kids that pushed each other in their studies. They were very bright. I had several kids that were getting 100% in my class and were in sixth place. I had kids that would nail all the questions and then the bonus questions. And, hey, there was this good rivalry. My son was in that group, in that 100% group, and he said, "You know what, I looking back on it, they helped encourage me in my studies, and kind of we pushed each other towards excellence." But Paul closes the book of Romans in chapter 16 and verse 27 saying, "To the only wise God." He has no rival, Paul makes it very clear. We can say that God knows all things. He is omniscient. His knowledge is unrivaled. He has never failed in a venture because he didn't have enough knowledge. There may be people in this room that say, "You know, I tried to start a business and it didn't go through. I didn't know a certain thing. I didn't know what the future would hold. I didn't know my market. I didn't know that business well enough." But God has never failed because he lacked knowledge. His wisdom is based on a perfect understanding of every possible thing. And of Jesus, we can see, as in Luke chapter 4, where it says that he perceived their thoughts. Jesus knew what they were going to say. And he always would answer with unassailable wisdom. Sometimes it was in the form of a question he would ask back to them, or a parable, or a statement, or a miracle. And they marveled at his knowledge, and if they knew enough, they'd marvel and wonder at his wisdom. In our text in chapter 55 there, as we're reading, why is it that we should seek the Lord where he may be found? Why is it that we should seek, the wicked should forsake his way, as it says there? Well, in verse 7, because, in verses 8 and 9, says the Almighty, "My thoughts are not your thoughts, my ways not your ways. Higher, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, my thoughts than your thoughts." It's helpful. I was benefited by somebody in our church this week. In a situation, I didn't know how to fix that. It would have limped along and not done very well, but somebody came along and said, "Well, let me use my know-how to help that situation." And now we have heat again in the house. It's kind of nice, you know. But God's know-how, he knows how. You might want to write some of these extra references down. 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 9. He knows how to rescue the godly from trials, and he knows how to keep the unrighteous under punishment until the day of judgment. God knows how to do all these things. And we should worship him because of his knowledge. We should adore him because of his wisdom. Satan will always be ready to tell you that he's on the level, that he has your best interest, that God is the liar. Satan will come along and promise what he can't deliver, speak of things that he does not know. He does label switching. He tells you that he can supply what you need. What he has, what he knows, can really advance you, and that somehow God is the great cosmic killjoy who's somehow holding you back. And Satan is just out after your best interest. And Eve fell for that lie in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 5. Part of that deception, she was deceived. 1 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 14. What the serpent spoke of knowing good from evil, he could only deliver knowledge of good and evil. And you know what? There are some things that God would that you never know. Just like a parent would like to protect their child from knowing certain things and certain scars on their mind. But all Satan could do is deliver knowledge of evil and the heartbreak and the consequences that go with that. They had innocence lost and rebellion known, and they are cast out of the garden, and they learn the hard way that Satan's wisdom is just really bait and switch. Just bait and switch. Solomon taught his son, Proverbs chapter 9, verse 13, the woman folly is loud. The word has the idea of brash. He goes on to say, she is seductive and knows nothing. Unlike God, who can give you wisdom that will aid you and help you in godly living. Folly, the foolishness of this world, and there's a lot of sources to find folly. Folly is at every corner. It's on every station of the radio and the television. It's in a lot of reading. It's in our foolish minds. And to follow folly and its seductive ways will leave you empty. But opposed to that, this wisdom of God is fulfilling. And when God revealed to Daniel Nebuchadnezzar's dream and the interpretation of it, Daniel responded with praise this way, Daniel 2:20. He said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. To him belongs wisdom and might. You say, boy, I could have used some of that wisdom this week. I'm going through a trial. And some of you are going through deep trials. And James tells us in James chapter 1, verse 5, he says, ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. It's not that God is saying, well, I'm wise and you're not. And I have it and you don't. But God says, you need wisdom in that trial. You need to know how to rely upon me, how to grow even through that. Not just pray that this thing would be removed, but to grow through that and thank me for that. Ask me, and I will give you wisdom. Second thing I'd like us to see into this point, point B, is his wisdom has no limit, no rival to his wisdom. And in his wisdom, it has no limit. If we can turn back to the 40th chapter and verse 28. As you're turning there, in Psalm 147 and verse 5, the psalmist said, his understanding is beyond measure. Ever seen or fallen for one of those things where they have a number of pennies or marbles or some object in a jar, and the person who can guess the highest number of those wins the pennies in the jar? I don't know what they would win. And there are times where you think, well, now I wonder how many, you try to count that up in your mind. How many layers could there possibly be? And some of you work that out in your mind. We never can figure out the immensity of the wisdom and the power of God. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 28. Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He does not grow faint or weary. God could say, you know what? Your captivity is not because of my inability or my failure. My understanding is unsearchable. Literally, what he says, when he says he's beyond measure, you can count on God. We can count on God's wisdom, but we can't count up fully. We can't exhaust the wisdom and the knowledge of God. And aren't you glad? How many times in your life have your first impression of somebody been, oh, they're deep. This is really deep. And then maybe the more you read, the longer you listen, you think, that's really shallow. That's not what I thought it was. But when you come to the Word of God and the wisdom of God, at no point does anybody ever say, I have God figured out. I know more than God does. I know how He does it now. I remember one time learning how a magician did a trick, and I just thought that I had reached nirvana. You know, I knew the secrets of the universe because I knew that one trick. And nobody can ever say, I have figured God out. I'm still trying to figure my wife out. I'll never figure God out. Romans 11:33, I think it's in your bulletin, says, oh, the depth of the riches and wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are His judgments and how inscrutable His ways. Omniscience. It's not just that God is omniscient, that He knows all things, but God is all wise and working. Wisdom works. Wisdom is pushing things forward. A person may have knowledge and yet still scratch their head and say, I don't know what to do with this. I don't know how to make this go forward. I don't know how to teach this. I know it, but I don't know how to teach it to others. Wisdom is God taking that knowledge and according to God's power, and He moves things forward through history. And that was to be a blessing to these people at Judah, as we'll see in just a moment. Roman numeral 2 then. This transcendent wisdom of God is not only God preeminently knowing all things, but God perfectly accomplishing His holy will. Perfectly accomplishing His holy will. Through all eternity, eternity past, eternity future, God is working. He is bringing things into being, as we saw from chapter 46 and verse 10, where He says, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose. Did you hear that? God says, I will accomplish all my purpose. Sometimes at a celebration party after a coach and a team have won some type of a championship, and then he says, and I'm telling you right now, we're going to do it again next year. And people applaud and they make noise, and the ones who then they actually do follow through on that, people think, how do you know that? But most of the time, those just fall off as a non-story because it's going on all the time. But God can say, I will accomplish it. But we've got, you know, Israel to the north has been laid waste by Assyria, and you're saying Babylon's going to do the same thing to us. And what is the future? And God says, I know the future. I'm all wise. Coupled to that, I'm all powerful. So first of all, point A, His plan is carried out. He says, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose, 46:10. I want to tell you a little secret. God never learns anything, especially from us. There's an aberrant theology that is depressing as far as I'm concerned that says, well, God doesn't know everything. Something, and so what you're saying, that God is surprised? God's not sure who's going to be saved? God's not sure how this is going to work out? There are certain things that God has left outside of His knowledge, and He's like us in that way? That's not what Isaiah understood. Isaiah, throughout this book, says God knows the past and he knows the future. He certainly knows your present, and he has the wisdom and power to accomplish all his holy will. And that was to comfort them. At the end of Isaiah chapter 44, in the first part of 45, he, even before Cyrus comes along, Cyrus of Persia, we've already brought out this point, that God could say, and I'm going to use this guy as my servant, and gates are going to open before him, and he's going to find out these hidden treasures, and he's going to do this, and he's going to do that, and he's going to do that, and so that it becomes clear only God could have done that through him. How could God possibly know that? Well, those who are really troubled by that would say, well, now, actually, you have this two authors, at least, of the book of Isaiah, and it's dated much later than that. And so Isaiah or whoever was just writing about what happened in the past. But the miracle and the wonder of it all is that God could say, he hasn't even shown up on the scene yet, and I'm telling you, here's my servant, here's what he's going to do, here's when I'm going to be done with him. God's understanding can't be measured. Let's go back to chapter 55. And there's something else that he tells us about God's understanding. We left off at verse 9. And my thoughts, then your thoughts. Let's pick up at verse 10. For as the rain and the snow come down from heaven and do not return there, but water the earth, making it bring forth and sprout, giving seed to the sower and bread to the eater, so shall my word be that goes out from my mouth. It shall not return to me empty, but it shall accomplish that which I purpose and shall succeed in the thing which I sent it. He says, so shall my word be that goes out from my mouth. God's revelation, he says, it's powerful, it's effective, it shall not return to me empty. It never fails its intended purpose, and it shall accomplish, it shall succeed. That was to be the grounds of confidence for these people. I don't know how this is all going to work out. Some of these things that Isaiah, you're telling us, it's marvelous, it's wonderful, I can't even get my head around it, I can't understand God or what he's about to do. But I rest in this, that my God can do anything. He brought this about. And the world, and he brought this judgment about because of us, because of failure on our part. But God, who is faithful to his word, as we'll see next week, he will bring us through. For ancient peoples, the idea of wisdom carried the idea of skill, of some type of a strategy. So a general who could map out a good battle plan was a wise general. Or in the Old Testament, an individual who was going to be used to as a craftsman to help build the temple, he had skill coupled to that God's wisdom through his skill to make these things that go into that building. God could say, look over with me at chapter 23 and verse 9. God claims credit for executing his plan. He doesn't allow anybody else. He says, I can plan to destroy and I can plan to save. It's all the same to me. Chapter 23, verse 9. The Lord of hosts, what's that mean again? The Lord of the armies, the Lord of all authorities, everything is at his disposal, has purposed it to defile the pompous pride of all glory, to dishonor all the honored of the earth. The Lord has purposed it. Over in chapter 48 and verse 3, he puts it this way. The former things I declared of old, they went from my mouth and I announced them, and suddenly I did them. And they came to pass, verse 5. I declared them to you from of old, before they came to pass, I announced them to you. That's pretty amazing. God says, nothing surprises me. Now turn over to chapter 28, which is where we'll spend most of the rest of our time. In As you turn there, I'm going to go the other direction, just because I can. Chapter 45, I want to read you a couple of verses here. In chapter 45, verses 2 through 4, he says, I will go before you, and I will level the exalted places, and I will break the pieces in pieces of the doors of the bronze. This is what he's telling to Cyrus. And I will call you, and I will do this, and I will do all these things. How is that that God could do that? Because he knows all things, and he's all wise. In chapter 46, and in verses 10 through 11 that we read earlier, he says, I will accomplish, I will bring it to pass. I have purpose. I will do this. For a person like you and I to say, well, I will do all these things. You're going to do it. You're going to tell us what's going to happen. And you're going to tell us that you can. You know, the reason we say that that's pride is because no one has that ability but God. But God says, I not only know, but I have the power and wisdom to do that. And it should comfort you. And you should rest in that. What did you do yesterday? That'd be kind of embarrassing if we had you take out a piece of paper and minute by minute account for your whole day. First of all, you might see some real waste of time and long periods of time that you couldn't account for. But there are a lot of things you couldn't even remember. See, well, there's, man, I can account for an hour. But I'm pretty sure there were 24 yesterday. God can tell us the future and say, it's as good as done. He can speak of the future of things that were way far out, not just when he would deliver them from exile, but a time that he will bring about a restoration and a blessing and make them the capital of the world. And he can say all that with more certainty than what you and I can talk about yesterday, because God knows all things. Point B, his power is at the disposal of his wisdom. And unlike the idols and the idol worshipers, we read of some of those idols who are carried back around on the backs of beasts. And other passages that are carved out of things, use this part of the wood for this and use this part of the wood for that, and you call this part an idol and the rest of it you warm yourself with. What foolishness. And Isaiah can say, instead of the one true God who made all things, who has infinite wisdom and power, you set that aside and you became enamored with idols, who, as he says in chapter 45 and verse 20, who have no knowledge. The idols or the people? Yes. On the other hand, Isaiah says, this God, Jehovah, he has perfect knowledge. And he has the ability to carry this out. He not only knows, sometimes we use the expression, he foreknows. He knows, he predestines, he elects, he knows these things, and he moves things in that direction. And when we speak of God being wise, we're speaking of God's ability to progress things. And when we speak of creation, we're looking at a great example of both God's wisdom and God's power. One of the seductive things of folly is a branch of learning that says, well, all this came about as some kind of a cosmic accident. There's no wisdom behind this. Eventually, things heated up. Eventually, matter did this. Eventually, and boom, you have things in perfect measure and planets and stars in perfect alignment and out from each other and weather. And all of this was an accident or according to the wisdom and knowledge of God? Listen and write this down. Jeremiah chapter 10 and verse 12, he says, it is he who made the earth by his power. You can either believe it or not. But don't try to tell me, I believe God and I believe his word, but I don't believe that stuff about creation. Because he says, it is he who made God by his power, who established the world by his, figure out what word goes in there? What are we talking about today? Who established the world by his wisdom. That's what I believe. In a nutshell, I am a creationist. I take God at His word. He said, well, then how did this happen? I don't know all those things. Well, what about this? That may even present a problem for what we know right now. According to your model, according to the way you date things. But I choose to believe God, who established the world by His wisdom. And then finally this morning, Roman numeral 3, precisely measuring out His judgment. Precisely measuring out His judgment. That's one of the reasons I would rather do dishes than cook, because I don't like to measure out. I remember when my wife was kind of, when we first got married, that was the part of married life that kind of scared her, was cooking, and she would follow the recipe, and she was a good cook following the recipe. But then all of a sudden the chemistry part of her kicked in, and it was, well, I wonder why they don't use cumin in this, or I wonder why they didn't put this in, and she started experimenting a little bit, and she went from a good cook to a great cook overnight. But she can measure, and it's kind of fun, because then our sons will call back and they'll say, hey, Mom, how do you make such and such? How much goes into that? I don't know, a handful, a shovelful, And sometimes it's by what she has in the refrigerator at the time. You know, God precisely measures out. He says, I'm bringing you judgment. Would you go to chapter 28 with me now? He says, I'm going to bring judgment to you. But not more. I'm not here to obliterate you as a people. I'm here to refine you as a nation. It starts off, the proud crown of the, drunkards of Ephraim, and the fading flower of his glorious beauty, which is on the head of the rich valley of those who overcome with wine. Behold, the Lord is one who is mighty and strong. That's who's coming. And like the storm of hail destroying a tempest, this is this Assyrian war machine. Like a storm of mighty overflowing waters, he cast down to the earth with his hand. Speaking of a thorough destruction here. The proud crown of the... Here it is again. The drunkards of Ephraim will be trodden underfoot. Let me set this up. In chapters 28 through 33, there are a series of woes, pronouncements of destruction. In verses 1 through 13, he's speaking about particularly of Israel, identified for us as Ephraim. And then in 14 following, he says, oh, and Judah, you're not left out of this. It's coming to you as well. And he speaks of them as Jerusalem. And so, first of all, point A, his counsel is to be heeded. Now, we've talked about God as all wise, and now we are to bow the knee. We are to listen. The counsel of God is to be heeded, is to be listened to, is to be obeyed. Now, when he refers to them, Ephraim, as a drunkard, you say, well, that's not real flattering. You ever tried to give counsel or wisdom to a person who's drunk? You think, that's a waste of time. Exactly. That's the point there. And he says the religious leaders, look down at verse 7, these also reel with wine and stagger with strong drink. The priest and the prophet reel with strong drink. They're swallowed by wine. They stagger with strong drink. They reel in vision. He says this is a constant problem. This characterizes these leaders, the priest and the prophet. All of you, you're wicked leaders. You know, think that's a problem? He says, look at the next verse. For all the tables are full of filthy vomit with no space left. Isaiah makes it very clear. He says, everywhere God looks is the evidence of your wickedness and your filthy corruption. You think you're doing fine and you walk around with an air about you, and God says you're stumbling around like a drunk person with bad judgment. You think you've got things orderly and neat and God should be impressed, and God looks down and he says, are you kidding me? It's filthy. It needs to be washed. It's disgusting. Judah's leaders, look at, down at verse 9, it's almost like a response for them in sarcasm. Let's put it that way. They say in verse 9, "To whom will he teach knowledge, and to whom will he explain the message? Those who are weaned from the milk, those who are taken from the breast?" He says, you know what, Isaiah, it's like you're speaking to kids. We're not kids. We know better. Your message is too simple. Verse 10, "For it's precept upon precept, and it's line upon line, and it's here a little and there a little." It's, you know, you're giving us like ABCs. We need something deeper than what you have, Isaiah. Now, Paul went through that, though, too, didn't he? And the Corinthian church seemed to be enamored by all philosophies and everybody but the teaching of the Apostle Paul. But the Lord goes on to say, and he says, "For by people of strange lips," verse 11, "with a foreign tongue, the Lord will speak to this people." He says, you don't listening to my line upon line. You don't want to hear the ABCs from me? I'm going to bring in a people who are going to speak in a language you don't know, the Assyrians. "To whom he said, 'This is rest, give rest to the weary, this is a repose,' yet they would not hear. And the word of the Lord will be upon them, will be to them." God says, all right, your sarcastic statement that prophecy and my teaching and my wisdom is just too simple, it's just below you. It's going to be precept upon precept. It's going to be a line upon line, here a little, there a little, that they may go and fall backwards. He says, when the rebels hear it, they're going to fall backwards. You're stumbling again, but this time to your own destruction. They will be broken and snared and be taken. My truth to you is that you're going into exile. And then verse 14, he speaks of Judah. He says, "Therefore, hear the word of the Lord, you scoffers." It was you drunkards in Israel. And now Judah, "you're scoffers. You rule this people in Jerusalem. You have said," isn't this the most amazing verse? Listen to this. "We have made a covenant with death. And with Sheol, we have made an agreement when the overwhelming whip passes through." A covenant with death. It's not till we get to passages like Daniel chapter 9, verses 27 and others, where we find, and then we find in the book of Revelation, that Israel will make a treaty with the Antichrist. In Isaiah's day, they would say, you know what? We're not afraid of Babylon because we made an alliance. Egypt's got our back. Doesn't work that way. You can't count on Egypt. To this very day, you can't count on Egypt. And he says, you know what? And he says, there's coming a day where you will make an agreement with the devil, with the Antichrist. And you will say, oh, we're facing destruction, but the Antichrist, he's got our back. He'll take care of us. He says, really? No. In verse 16, "Therefore says the Lord, behold, I am the only one who has laid as a foundation in Zion, a stone, a tested stone, a precious cornerstone, a pure foundation." I think he's speaking of the coming Messiah. He will provide the right foundation. He will be the foundation for that millennial kingdom. And whoever believes will not be in haste. I think there's a little bit of gospel good news even there. "And I will make justice the line." Let me skip down to verse 19. He says, "But then your covenant with death will be annulled, and your agreement with Sheol will not stand." In that tribulation, this agreement with, you thought the Antichrist is going to help you, it just won't happen that way. I like verse 19. "For as often as it passes through, it will take you. For morning by morning it will pass through. By day and by night it will be sheer terror to understand the message. For the bed is too short to stretch oneself on, and the covering too narrow to wrap oneself in." And I had a hard time wrapping myself in that. So, you know, you, all your alliances are going to be like a person who has a blanket that's a little too short. You could either pull it up here and say, because my shoulders and my neck are cold, and now my feet are cold. All right, pull it back down there. Oh, now I'm cold up here. The frustration. You ever had that? He says, you know, anything that you rely upon is going to only bring frustration. It will not bring full coverage. For the Lord will rise up. The Lord will rise up. He's constantly telling them to look to Him and be saved. And Isaiah chapter 48, verse 16, he says, draw near to me and hear this. Trying to get their attention. Proverbs 9:10 says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. Let me ask you, are we just hearers of the word? Or as James 1 tells us, are we doers of the word also? These people, that this message of Isaiah, most of those that would hear, and he would say, believe God. Listen, the only one who can shorten these days, Matthew 24, or the only one who can measure out the exact amount of judgment you need and then stop it short is God. In fact, in Isaiah chapter 28, we won't go into real depth, but verses 22 and following, he talks about this limit that God puts on his own punishment of them. The final point there, point B, his wisdom is to be comforting. His counsel is to be heeded, and his wisdom is to be comforting. God puts limits. He says, all right, I'm weighing out what I'm going to put on Israel and on Judah, and it will have an end. And that should have been of great comfort. I like how A.W. Tozer put it. He says that God's wisdom has a moral dimension. And he says, quote, he is able to devise perfect ends to achieve those ends by the most perfect means. And he is able to work towards a predestined goal with flawless precision. It's nice to see when somebody can have a design and lay things out and then build that piece of furniture or whatever, and it looks just like that. It's fantastic. That was in your head, and then it went to this, and then it went to that, and it looks great. Whereas I get things done and there's still some bolts and things left over, it's like, oh, I guess. Sit on it. See? It didn't fall. It still works. That's the way it's supposed to be. But Israel was chosen by God. And they were given a responsibility, a moral responsibility before God. And God said in Deuteronomy chapter 28, and when you don't obey me, and when you put others before me, and you don't love me only, there's going to be judgment that's coming. And he laid it out very clearly. And now in Isaiah, he's saying, just like a farmer has certain tools to plow and certain tools to reap, and everything is in perfect measure in time, God knows exactly the length of time that your exile should be. And God knows exactly when to restore his kingdom. And God is in control of all this. And I like how he puts it in Isaiah chapter 48 and verse 10. He says, God put you in the furnace of affliction. Maybe you feel like you're in the furnace of affliction right now. There may be something in your life you say, I don't know what this is supposed to do. I'm not sure how to react. I'm not sure. Put your hope in the Lord. Love Him supremely through that. Believe that every trial, as it had a beginning, it will have an end. And God does all things well. Your hope is in this, that I don't know where this is going. I don't know when this will be over, but I know that God is all wise. And that doesn't mean He just has knowledge. It means He is moving things towards a goal. And He's a goal for me and for this. I don't know. I don't know. But I trust Him. That's all I do know. This should be a warning and a comfort. And all that because all that was the introduction to the last verse of chapter 28. Let's read that aloud. Verse 29. This also comes from the Lord of hosts. He is wonderful in counsel and excellent is wisdom. Let's say that last part again. He is wonderful in counsel and excellent in wisdom. That'd be a good verse to memorize. And then we get to passages like Isaiah chapter 9 and verse 6, and there we're told that he is Wonderful Counselor. Now, Isaiah 28 was not a feel-good chapter of the year. It was not easy reading. Israel, you're going to go through this with Assyria. Judah, you're not left out. Babylon's going to do this to you. And God's judgment is going to be like a tool, and it's going to be a refining. But know this, and this comes at the very end of all that. I wanted to share with you verse 29, but we had to look at the whole chapter, appreciate that last verse. His counsel is, he's wonderful in counsel, he's excellent in wisdom. And you and I, if we believe God, we should also be saying, I don't know where all this is going, but the Lord knows. He's in control. It's not enough to live in the information age. It's not enough to have Google and Wikipedia and school. It's not enough just to have facts. 1 Corinthians tells us that the wisdom of this world will be destroyed. We are saved because of the wisdom of God. Write this reference down, Ephesians 1, 7 and 8. We're saved. The Lord gives us forgiveness. Here's why. According to the riches of His grace, which He lavished upon us in all wisdom and insight. Did God use wisdom to create the world? Absolutely. Did it take the wisdom of God to bring about a plan in which God's justice remains intact, and yet God in mercy can reach down and save us? That is the grace and the wisdom of God. I need wisdom as a pastor. We need wisdom as employees, as spouses, as friends. I would say that life and ministry are best served by relying upon the wisdom of God, not by human, it says, earthly wisdom. Heads bowed, eyes closed at this point. I want you just to begin to ask yourself, who's wise in my mind? What really is wisdom? Am I really relying upon the Lord? Let me read to you a couple of verses as we close, just with eyes closed and just thinking on these words. How do we know if we're wise? James 3:13 says, "Who is wise and understanding among you? By his good conduct let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. That is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic." How do we know if the wisdom that we are living by and that we value, if it's really God's or not? Then listen to this. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exist, there will be disorder and every vile practice. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. That's the wisdom of God. If you're living by God's grace, if you're relying upon His counsel, you're heeding His word, your life will show in purity and power. Let's stand and be dismissed in a word of prayer.